You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
LaVine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern and 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, runner of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, host of Bulls Outsiders on NBC Sports Chicago and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Drop us all of your texts, your voicemails, whenever you're listening to the show, wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to us here at Locked On Bulls. Drop us a voicemail or a text message, 331-979-1369. And that's exactly what we're going to do on today's episode. Welcome back, Matt. Hopefully you had a great New Year's. I had a wonderful New Year's too. Hopefully everybody out there listening had a great New Year's. We are going to do all of our mailbag questions today, text messages, voicemails, just kind of catch up for the brand new year, and then you guys can continue to drop those all weekend long. But first and foremost, Matt, how you doing?
Doing great. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Happy New Year to you. My New Year's Eve was pretty low-key. As I get older, I am less inclined to like go out and party and rage and all that. We just went over to our friend's house and had a nice home-cooked dinner, had some nice beef tenderloin and lots of delicious sides, and then just watched some college football. Got to see the Wildcats win their bowl game, so that was fun. And wow, here we are. First episode of a new year, 2019. Bulls got a game tonight. And on the circus goes.
It's kind of funny. I was going back as we were listening for our best ofs last year, and I started all the way back around this time. And it's funny the tone that our show had compared to the way the tone of our show is right now. And last year at this time, it was a little bit more upbeat. We were actually talking about a lot of the positives the front office was, moves that the front offices were making. We were talking about an anticipation of a Nico Mirotic trade. And now 1 year later, we're kind of back in this same cycle. You know, the front office has made some weird moves. The Bulls are coming off some drama over the last few weeks. So it's kind of just funny to see where we are in 365 days. But to say we're out ahead of the pack, to say we're behind schedule where we were at last year, I think we're right around the same spot we were, with just a couple different problems than we had last year. But it's weird. It's different. But 365 days later, we sit at about the same spot we were last year.
No, and yeah, I think about the fact that around this time last year, the Bulls were coming off of, or still at the tail end of, playing their best stretch of the rebuild. Right, you had Nico returning in December and the Bulls going on that 7-game winning streak. And then even after the winning streak ended, they were still winning a good amount of games. And we were starting to see Chris Dunn play well. We had Zach LaVine back in the fold. Markkanen still doing his thing. So probably, you know, December into January last year was the most optimistic you and I have felt about the rebuild, just because of that. And obviously there have been kind of, you know, two steps forward, one step back kind of stuff that has happened since then. And here we are, the Bulls are 10-27 and have the lowest scoring offense in the league. So I think right now we're kind of in the mood of the one step back part.
Yeah, when I mean, it can't be all bad yet, because you think about, okay, if it's worst case scenario, the Bulls are one of the worst teams in basketball finishing up the season in a couple months, then it's not all that bad. I mean, top three pick almost guarantees you one of the three Duke players. So the season won't be for nothing, but let's hope all of our young guys can stay healthy and we can actually see them play the rest of the season out fully together, instead of having to piecemeal, oh, these two guys played together, but you're missing this piece, and oh, we saw these three guys play limited minutes together. Let's have Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr., Chris Dunn, all of those guys stay healthy for the remainder of whatever it is, 40, 45 games we've got left in this season. So on top of tonight's game, we've got the Magic for the third time this season, Matt. Third matchup against the Magic. Anything to highlight tonight's game? I would assume that the Bulls are going to come out and try to win this game. They've played the Magic close. They should have won that first game, and then in Mexico City it was a little bit better. But any keys to tonight's game that you're going to be looking for?
Yeah, I mean, if anything, that the Bulls might have a chance to beat the Magic for the second time after they beat them in the second of their two meetings, because Orlando looks like they'll probably be shorthanded again. They were missing DJ Augustine, former Bull, who's really been serving as Orlando's starting point guard this season, and his backup, Jonathan Simmons. They each have ankle sprains that they're dealing with right now. They both sat out Magic's game Monday night. So the Bulls could be looking at having the opportunity to play against Jaren Grant, another former Bull.
We've added Jaren Grant, who we talked about,
who might be asked to be handling the starting point guard duties for that Orlando team, and we all in Chicago here know that Jaren Grant ain't really anything too special. A turnover prone point guard who, you know, he's not going to go out there and win you a lot of games. So the Bulls, I mean, this is a very winnable game. They've proved that they can beat the Orlando Magic. The Orlando Magic don't have a whole lot going for them this season. And if the Bulls get solid games from at least, you know, 75% of their core players, this is a very winnable game, even if it is another low-scoring game, because neither team has managed to score 100 points in either of the two contests thus far.
Yeah, the last time these two faced off, Lauri Markkanen dropped 32. He had 32, 6, and 3 in 37 minutes of play. He knocked down 4 of 6 of his three-pointers. Justin Holiday in this game had 11 points, 10 rebounds. He was 0 for 5 from 3. Zach LaVine missed the second game in this Bulls win. But this is another game that I'm going to be looking at as far as Lauri Markkanen taking advantage of some of his matchups and honestly limit what Nikola Vukovic is going to be able to do. And same thing with Evan Fournier. They let Evan Fournier drop 24 points and 5 for 10 from 3. So that's going to be something that the Bulls should try and eliminate tonight, is stop the 3-point scoring, because then they're going to have to rely on Aaron Gordon and Vucevic down low to try to provide for their offense. So if they can do that, rely more on Carter and Markkanen to beat those guys down low, I think they'll be all right tonight.
Yeah, you could also expect a big game, or certainly at least a big effort for Vukovic, because remember, he got absolutely embarrassed and posterized by Markkanen in that game, the second of their two meetings in late December. So he's probably going to come out with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder tonight.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to see a repeat of a 4 for 17 from Aaron Gordon either, so he's somebody else to watch out for. Very curious how Markkanen matches up with him tonight, so that's going to be another thing that I'm going to be watching. But more so than anything else is how Chris Dunn builds off of his recent performances, how him and Chris Dunn and Lauri Markkanen play together, and we'll get a little bit more of a taste of that tonight. But this is a very winnable game for the Bulls tonight, so no complaints if they do pick up a win here. This will be a nice, a team that the Bulls should beat. The Magic have played well. I mean, since we've seen them last, they were 14-17. They've played decently, but this is a team that the Bulls should be able to take care of now that they're almost fully healthy. Bobby Portis is still out, no Denzel Valentine. So they should be able to beat the Orlando Magic, get business done, start the year off fresh, and pick up a win tonight.
Yeah, I mean, it would certainly be a letdown if they didn't beat this team, which they, you know, they, there's probably not a team in the league that they know better than the Magic right now, having already played them twice. And both games happening fairly recently.
A few less post-ups from Robin Lopez, and I think you'll be all right too tonight, right, Matt?
Oh, my God. I love the man. I love the man. But enough, Jim Boylan. Enough with the Rolo post-ups. You're wasting four other guys on the court, all of whom are probably, you know, depending on who's out there with him, more important to the rebuild than Robin Lopez is.
All right, let's get on to our text and voicemail line. Every Wednesday we do this. We do mailbag, dropping your text messages, your voicemails. We run through as many as we can get through in the week. So continue to do that. 331-979-1369 is the place to do that. All right, let's start with a relatively easy question from the 219. 219 simply asks, is Wendell Carter Jr. a unicorn in this league? Is he young? Is he a guy that we don't know much about? Or is he kind of what he is, what we've seen him so far? So expanding on his question a little bit, is Wendell Carter Jr. a unicorn in the same fashion that people were talking about Markkanen was, or maybe even Porzingis? Matt, what say you?
I mean, I think you and I have talked a lot recently about what Wendell's ceiling might be, and how we've maybe been a little frustrated with his lack of involvement, and we're not sure if he's just hitting a rookie wall or if he's starting to get down on himself with all of the foul trouble that we have also discussed, and whether or not Fred Hoiberg and now Jim Boylan have done the best they can to really make Wendell feel like he is involved, not just as this team's rim protector and a great defensive, you know, potential kind of player, but also involved on the offensive end. And we have seen good games from Wendell offensively where he's doing a little two-man game with Chris Dunn in a handful of games recently, or he's crashing the boards or, you know, finding ways to contribute on that end. And we've also seen games where he's just completely ghosting. So, I mean, whether you want to use the word unicorn or something else, like, I don't know about you, Jordan. I still believe that Wendell has a really high ceiling, and I feel like we often forget that this kid is still just 19 years old. Because outside of, you know, players like LeBron's level, and I know that everybody in the league's going crazy for Luka right now, but it's not easy to come into this league as a 19-year-old and immediately look like a stud and a star and an all-star. That doesn't happen all that often. So I think we need to be patient with Wendell, and I think that if he is working for, playing for the right coaches, the right, you know, playing with the right personnel, he can grow to be a very good starter in this league. And I think especially sharing a front court with Markkanen, those two have the potential to grow into a great front court duo, and it's just going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah, I think this is what we knew, and you know, to see how deep the 2018 draft was, like, look at the top six guys that were picked. Look at the top seven. Look at the top 10 guys. Every single one of those guys, I think, has contributed in some fashion to the team that they've gone to. And it's just varying levels of success so far. Like, Doncic, obviously, I think a lot of people among NBA Twitter knew that this guy was going to come in and be able to do exactly what he's doing right now. 19.6 points per game, 6.5 rebounds, 5.5, nearly over 5 assists per game. Like, he's doing everything that he was doing over in Europe, a little bit more polished because he was playing among professionals, as opposed to some of these other guys who are coming out of college only 1 year. Wendell is a part of that group, and I think We knew his defensive skills, and like we have said multiple times, asking him to carry most of the defense on this team, for an entire team to do that, and you're just starting out as a rookie, I think is a tall task. So there's a lot of different things you could piecemeal from a lot of these rookies and say, well, this is a certain circumstance, well, here's a certain circumstance. What I gather from it is just he's going to need some time. It's going to take 2-3 years to really see what we have in him. Doncic has come along faster than we knew he was going to. DeAndre Ayton was taken number one overall for a reason. Jaren Jackson Jr. looks like one of the best guys in this draft. A lot of people talked about him that way. So all of these guys taking ahead of Wendell Carter Jr. might be performing a little bit better in the box score, but I think there's a lot of room for growth for Carter, and it comes with trying to figure out whether or not he can score, if his offense game is really there and just needs to be tapped into. But I'm willing to give it 2-3-4 years, as opposed to last year when we were talking about Markkanen. we kind of knew that he was the shooter. He was the guy that was going to provide us with instant offense. So you wanted to see a little bit more from him right away, and we did. So I think I'm going to be a little bit more patient with Carter because we kind of have this unknown about his offensive game right now.
Yeah, like I said, it's kind of, well, you hope that wherever this Bulls rebuild is going and the people running it do right by Wendell and he grows and reaches his potential, because you see the potential right now, but you just kind of know it's going to take some molding and it's going to take some time. All right, let's go to our next one. This one, speaking of guys that are drafted that people are really high on, not Paul Zipser.
Paul Zipser, who we're high on.
Hey, guys, this is Jay. Happy holidays. Thanks, Jay. Happy holidays to you, too. He said, as I'm writing this, I'm seeing in my news feed that the Mavs are gauging interest around the league in Dennis Smith Jr. I'm not too sure how Dennis has been playing this year because of the rise of Luka over there in Dallas, but do you guys think the Bulls should have some interest in getting DSJ? Not sure what the Mavs would want from us for him, but I wouldn't mind a trade package that includes Felicio. Philadelphia knows Felicio ain't no Michael Jordan, but maybe Dallas doesn't know that. What do you guys think? Do you think Dennis has a higher ceiling than Dunn? So, Jordan, I'll let you touch on that first. What about DSJ to the Bulls?
I saw this storyline, and I was wondering, like, really? They're going to give up on a guy that, like, after the draft, he was jumping out of the gym. Like, he was talked about as, oh, can't believe 10 other teams passed up on him, 11 other teams passed up on him, and let him slide all the way to the Mavs. This year's been a little bit different for him. I think people are starting to realize that Dennis Smith Jr. didn't have the defensive game to go with some of his crazy athleticism, and that's all right. I don't know what you're going to have to give up for Dennis Smith Jr., but it's going to be a decent amount, because I think a lot of other teams around the league would like a bouncy athletic point guard like DSJ. So, I mean, you're talking about former lottery pick just a year out, and it's not like a case of Markelle Fultz where he's kind of broken, don't really know how to fix him, had problems with the team. Like, that's not really the case with Dennis Smith Jr., so the asking price is going to be massive. So, I don't know, like, can you pair a guy like Dennis Smith Jr., who's going to need the ball in his hands in order to score and to make plays, when you got Zach LaVine, when you got Lauri Markkanen? Look, I'm not saying I don't want the player, but I don't think you're going to be able to find a package with the players that we have on the Bulls roster right now to satisfy what Dallas is going to want. And I'm curious, like, why all of a sudden does Dallas want to get rid of Dennis Smith Jr.? What's wrong with his game? What do they see now that they didn't see a year ago? You know, those are the types of questions I'm asking. But first and foremost, I don't think the Bulls have a package good enough to trade for him. That's just as simple as that.
Yeah, well, as far as why now and why Dallas might be gauging interest, I think it, as Jay touched on in his text, I think a big part of it is the arrival of Luka and the fact that, while maybe not a traditional point guard, he has shown that he can be that team's main distributor and playmaker already, you know, less than halfway through his rookie season. And you're right that people were crazy high on Dennis Smith Jr., especially after his performance in like Summer League 2017, when he was just tearing people apart and everybody was saying, oh my God, I can't believe people passed on Dennis Smith Jr. But maybe the Mavs are realizing that Luka is the future of their franchise. And as good as Dennis Smith Jr. has looked, you know, and his points per game has only taken a slight dip this season, 15.2 as a rookie, 13 this year. Same thing with assists, a slight dip from 5.2 to 3.9. His shooting numbers have increased. He shot 39% his rookie season. He's shooting 44.5% this season. He increased his three-point percentage from 31.3. He's currently shooting 37.4. That's a big jump behind the arc. Like, you're seeing Dennis Smith Jr. still being a shooting-capable, playmaking-capable point guard in this league with a high ceiling, who's still only 21, and as you said, crazy athleticism. Dennis Smith Jr.'s trade value right now, considering that he's still on his rookie deal, is very high. And maybe Dallas is realizing that and saying, all right, we're going to build around Luka. Dennis Smith Jr. is expendable right now, and we might be able to get a huge haul for him because of all of those combinations of factors. So that, I think, is why Dallas might be at least putting out feelers right now. But to your point, I agree. The Bulls, I mean, unless they're sending Dallas multiple firsts, I don't see anybody on this roster on this Bulls roster that Dallas is saying, yeah, give me that guy.
You know, I don't think, like, just reading through some of the stuff from Dallas reporters, it doesn't sound like there's some type of rift between Doncic and Smith Jr., and it just seems like they're in a problem that's a pretty good problem to have, is you've got pretty two really solid young players. It's just a matter of figuring out how those two guys can play together. And of course, like, they're always going to keep their one ear open, you know? They're always going to be listening. And so, to me, I mean, it sounds like the Mavericks have him off the table unless they're going to all of a sudden be able to unload a package for a star. So I think that's where the move is. It's not necessarily trading Dennis Smith Jr. away for picks or for trading him away for other young talent. It's to package something up to acquire a star to win now. That's just my personal opinion. If you got Doncic under control right now, and he seems like a game changer for your team, you got DeAndre Jordan, you got Harrison Barnes, you got something there. So to me, if you're going to move a potentially really good young point guard, you're looking to upgrade as opposed to just trade off or look for future assets. But that's just my perspective on where the Mavericks are at. And even Mark Stein said it. It's like, they're not shopping him, but they're keeping things kind of open and letting at least teams call them about Dennis Smith Jr., see where that starts and where that ends.
And honestly, you know who would look really good in that Dallas starting five?
Cameron Payne.
Lauri Markkanen.
Oh, that's true.
No, Markkanen, man. You make Luka your legit point guard, and you play Markkanen between Barnes and DeAndre, so that's your 3, 4, and 5. I mean, that is a formidable
team. You're going to make Bulls fans very angry right now because that is a scenario that could
happen.
I'm not
saying it's happening. I'm just saying, like, as far as what the Mavs might want for DSJ, dude, you put Markkanen in that starting four spot with Luka, DeAndre, Barnes. That looks like a damn good team. But, you know, I don't see Gar Foreman and John Paxson saying, yeah, we want Dennis Smith so badly that we're going to give you marketed for him. That's not happening.
The only reason I say the Bulls fans are mad is because that could have been a real scenario this summer. Is the Bulls could have traded up and had Luka alongside Lauri Markkanen in a Bulls uniform as opposed to a Mavericks one. But yeah, nonetheless, I don't think there's going to be any scenario where Dennis Smith Jr. is going to another tanking or rebuilding team. If anything, he's going to go to a place where they're going to hit the reset button now and they're looking for assets as opposed to just going to another rebuilding team. And that's ultimately what I think the Mavericks are going to want. They're going to want to upgrade as opposed to just moving chips across the table. All right, let's get to another text message here. Comes from the 773, this one from Michael. Tell those fans who leave the Bulls now, stay gone. Everybody asked for a rebuild, now you got it, and you're crying now that the team isn't back on top in 2 years. We don't want y'all back when the team becomes something again. Simply for Michael. I read this because I kind of agree with him. Like, the fans that are getting mad or frustrated with where the team is right now after 2 years, if your expectation was potential playoffs this year, you have nothing to get mad about. We told you at Media Day, we said, don't get your hopes up that 40 wins is a possibility. And I said it, you know, go back and listen to our episode yesterday. Our conversation with C-Red Fred back in August, I told him, I said, you know, health is going to be a huge factor for this team this year. If you want them to get to 40 wins, they're going to have to stay healthy. I said that back in August. And now look at where we are in January. We haven't had a fully healthy team all year, and there's been a lot of moves made since then. So I agree. I agree with what Michael's saying. It's like, if you were willing to say yes to the rebuild back in June 2017, then you got to be more patient than a year and a half. You just have to. And you knew that there was going to be bad times coming. But I do agree in a sense that you can be pissed off and frustrated about some of the moves made inside of this rebuild that either have set the Bulls back one step, set them back two steps, or kind of zigzagged their plan and not really in a necessarily a straight line of where we wanted it to go. So I don't know. How do you feel, Matt? Do you feel like Bulls fans are justified for being pissed off if this team isn't better than where they should have been a year ago?
Well, yeah, I mean, it depends on the specific reasons why you're mad. You know, this texter Michael saying, you know, these fans who asked for a rebuild and are now crying because the team isn't back on top in 2 years. I don't think that's a realistic portion of the fan base and why they're angry. I don't think a realistic large portion of the fan base expected this rebuild to be near complete in season 2. That's a ridiculous expectation. And to your point, I agree that I think you maybe were a little bit more optimistic than me. If healthy, and if healthy for a full season with none of your key players getting hurt, they were still going to be a little shy of being a playoff team, even in the Eastern Conference. I still believe that, and I would still believe that now. If we were to rewind and get rid of the injuries, I still think that the Bulls would be borderline fringe playoff team in the East. So it depends on what your expectations were. You know, you and I had that collection of voicemails from some of our listeners that we put up on social media, and I think it was like right after the embarrassing 56-point loss and the changing of the guard at coach and some of Boylan's comments and the team's near mutiny and all that stuff that got national attention that made us kind of embarrassed as a fan base to lead to some of the people saying, you know what, I'm done with this team. I'm done. I can understand that there is always a little bit of hyperbole in the moment. You're worked up saying, gosh, the Bulls are an embarrassment nationally again, and I just can't take it anymore. If that is the kind of stuff that gets you mad, if the front office saying, oh, Jim Boylan has our full support while he archaically puts a new kind of grinded out mentality on our young players, and Jabari Parker situation turning into a giant mess where he's not playable, but he's not tradable. And all, like, if that's the stuff that's getting you mad, and if that's the thing that is saying to you, this is the last straw I've had with this team, I can understand a little bit of that. And it's your right to say, I don't want this team. I don't want to be a fan of this team anymore. And Michael is right to say to those people, if you give up now, then I'm less inclined to feel like throwing my arm around you at the bar when we're watching the Bulls win some playoff games in, you know, years down the road. That's fair. But I also think that Michael is a little misguided in saying that, like, a lot of the fans right now are pissed because they expected this rebuild to be complete in 2 years. I don't think a lot of people had that expectation.
I agree with you. I don't think a lot of people did either. And people wanted to be optimistic after the last couple of months that they had last year, and then coming into this summer with a really good draft pick, actually turning out and taking the guy that most people felt comfortable with, Vince Carter, and then signing Zach LaVine back and excited to see what he was going to do. And people were like, all right, if you're going to try this thing with Jabari, maybe it will work. But I, you know, going back and listening to a lot of our episodes from last year and just from the summer in general, you know, you and I had this team pegged at no better than 35 wins, and that was fully healthy. And I think that was a justifiable expectation for a team second year in a rebuild. That gives you some growing pains that serves for a little bit of injuries here and there, which are going to happen throughout the season. But then you get to extreme cases like the Bulls have had. The Bulls have just been unlucky this year, like having 4 or 5 rotation guys sit out more than a month throughout the season, each one individually, that doesn't help anything. So that's part of it too, is like part of it is luck, and the Bulls have been very unlucky this season so far. And the switch to Boylan too is a big factor. Like, the Bulls are revamping everything that they're doing right now, so that's also going to play in a factor of where this thing goes. And, you know, that's what we have to do, is retailer kind of where we see this rebuild going with Boylan, or if it's going to be the person after Boylan. Because we kind of had this rebuild, at least I did in my head, constructed in the eyes of Fred Hoiberg's going to be the guy to build up a lot of these young guys. And that's the guy that we have faith in. And now that I don't really have faith in Jim Boylan to be that guy, I'm sitting back like still believing in our players, but not necessarily believing in the system that's being run. And that's a hard place, at least for me as a fan, to be sitting at right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, let's move to our next one and take a break from the rebuild skepticism. Jordan, I don't think we've ever gotten a question on this topic, and it's awesome, and I can't wait to get your thoughts on it. This one comes to us from the 630. Hey, guys. Hope you had a Merry Christmas. I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast this morning, and they brought up an interesting point about podcasts. With so many athletes starting podcasts, J.J. Redick, Vince Carter, C.J. McCollum, to name a few, why don't more sports teams sponsor a pod? Specifically, am I crazy to think it would be awesome to have a Bulls podcast sponsored by the team where the players get a platform to speak? Who wouldn't want to hear Wendell Carter talk about his first NBA season, or Zach LaVine talk about his summer workouts? Maybe even on nights like when they play the Timberwolves, get players like D. Rose, Lual Deng, or Taj to come on. I'm sure there's a spot for two charming hosts like yourselves. I'm sure there are a bunch of sponsorship or liability reasons why the team wouldn't want their name on an uncensored medium like a podcast, but it'd be fun, right? He finishes with, completely willing to social media champion, write my senator to make this happen if we need to sell it. Jordan, this is a very cool question. What are your thoughts?
There's a lot of layers to it. Like, look around the league right now. While the Cleveland Cavaliers didn't sponsor Richard Jefferson's podcast, he was running one and having all the Cleveland Cavaliers guys on the road with him on the podcast. J.J. Redick started when he was with the Clippers, and then kind of here and there he'll have guys on. And, you know, C.J. McCollum, you had mentioned, also has a podcast. Terry Rozier is on a Barstool podcast. He joins once a week. So there are guys.
Danny Green has one.
Yeah, Danny Green has one. So there are guys around the league that do host podcasts. The problem with it becomes, if a team sponsors it, is it 100% genuine? You know, that's what I always ask myself. Right. If it's sponsored by a team, is it 100% genuine? Are the guys actually telling you the truth of what's going on in there? Or do they not want to say anything because it's under the umbrella of a sports team? It's the team that you play for. You know you can't really say anything bad, as opposed to a player just jumping on a podcast that he's not a part of, or maybe doing something on the side that's not under the umbrella of a team. I think it's a really good idea, though, and I think... The problem is podcasting is still very young. It is like, it is, even though it's been around for almost 20 years, it hasn't really gotten the, it's starting to peak as far as popularity goes. And I think in 5 years, podcasting is going to be exploding even more so than it is right now. So I just don't think it's gotten to the level of the audience that matches sports fans in general. There's only a fraction of sports fans that listen to podcasts right now. And that's kind of crazy to think about, but all of those factors are, I think, a reason why a lot of teams don't have sponsored podcasts right now, mostly because of, you know, you get into the factor of, well, are they telling us the truth? Is it content that people actually want to listen to? And it's time consuming. It's time consuming as hell.
Yeah. I mean, I think time consuming is one thing, but the key is what you were touching on just a second ago, which is that what's the level of realness and sincerity and open and honest conversation that the team would be willing to let its players have? Because there is, I mean, and it's a concern for, it would be a concern for any team across the league. And I'm sure that, you know, when Danny Green got traded from San Antonio to Toronto, the Raptors had a conversation with him about what can you say on your pod? What are you going to be talking about? And the same is true for Redick and all the other guys that have pods in across the league. Because the team's PR stance and the team's PR wellness across the league is very important. It doesn't matter who the team is. Everyone wants to make sure that they are only seen in a positive light when it comes to their players and speaking about the organization they work for. The Bulls here in Chicago would be the team I would say least likely to be okay with a player hosting a podcast and speaking freely and honestly.
Absolutely.
We're talking about a team that is rumored to have had rats.
Is he a rat?
Among the coaching staff reporting to the front office regarding what was being said between players in the locker room, in practices, etc.
Does it look like he's a rat?
For everything that John Paxson says about, oh, we're not concerned about outside, what the outside people are saying, and we only are concerned ourselves with what's going on in our building, and I don't really care that there are a lot of people unhappy with our job performance. We believe that what we're doing is right. We're headed in the right direction, XYZ. For all of that lip service about they don't really care about outside opinions, this team is one of the most social media paranoid teams in the league. Just based on what I've learned after paying very close attention to this team and how they operate for several years, the Bulls are paranoid when it comes to what is said about their organization. It would not surprise me at all if some player on the Bulls said, hey, I'm thinking about, I have this opportunity, somebody approached me about doing a podcast, and the Bulls immediately shut it down.
Just think about the amount of times players go on national radio shows or even shows here in Chicago. How many times do you hear a Bulls player be interviewed throughout the year? Compare that to baseball or compare that to football, to any other organization in the city. How often do you actually hear from a player? Not that often. This summer, we heard from Jabari Parker once when he signed. We heard from Zach LaVine once when he signed. They went on one media tour, all of them. And that's not to say that neither of those guys want to talk more often. It's just kind of the way it is. Think about all of the players that have been here. How many times do they get to speak? Usually, it's either at the beginning of the season, during the All-Star break when one of those guys has a good relationship with a player, or at the end of the season, or you have to catch them. You have to catch them during their offseason when they have a little bit more time to speak. And even then, conversations can be, it depends on the player too. So, but that's my thing, is just think about like national radio shows and shows that have a ton of attention here. They can't even get Bulls players on,
right?
Bulls coaches on.
Well, and that's, yeah, you know, a point of clarification. You're referring to interviews, maybe a bit more long form interviews on talk shows, sports radio stations, as opposed to the players' availability for media sessions, like at shoot around, after shoot around.
Correct, because those are
post game.
Those are mandatory, and those are
right. Those are mandatory. It's the extraneous stuff that we never really hear. Bulls players do as far as radio. And like when the Wolves came back to town a few weeks ago, there was Taj Gibson like doing interviews for sports radio stations because he still has relationships with those guys and is nice enough of a player to want to speak. And I mean, just another example is, Jordan, you and I were fortunate enough to do that event with Bobby Portis earlier this summer, our bowling event, and part of that was getting to do a nice Q&A session with him, but we had to jump through a lot of hoops to make that happen. With this team, I love where this texter's head is at. It would be awesome to get a Bulls player or two to do a podcast, and of course, you and I would be thrilled to be a part of it, but let's be real about the team that we're talking about. There is no way in hell they would let that happen.
And we've had channels where we've asked players to come on outside of just going to the Bulls PR, and they've said yes, and then we haven't heard from them. So there are things where we do ask, and sometimes it's timing. It's really hard to catch players during the season. They've got everything that they're going on with their schedule. And let's also not forget too, not every player is very good at talking. Like it's hard to be an NBA basketball player and a very good broadcaster. Flip-flop that. You may be a terrible basketball player but a really good broadcaster. Flip-flop that. You may be a really good player but a terrible broadcaster. Some of it's just not meant for some of these guys. But what I will say is there is no doubt in my mind in the next 2 years you're going to see a lot more player podcasts popping up, guys going on shows. Guys feel more comfortable now because they feel like they have a voice, and I think the NBA takes that first step, and maybe that'll expand the Bulls' horizons a little bit more and say, you know what, maybe we should give our players a little bit of the benefit of the doubt and let them go talk a little bit, because it can only be good for our team as a whole. Be a little bit more honest, be a little bit more open, see where the players are coming from. But there's no doubt in my mind that I think there's going to be way more player podcasts coming in the next couple of years. And we would, Matt and I both, would love to front something like that. So if you guys know somebody or know something, we would totally and be wide open for any player to join us here.
I think you made a good point just now, which is also that like it might increase a bit of trust between this organization, ownership and management, and the fan base that has so many skepticism and criticisms and questions about how they operate. If they were to trust their players more and do so in a way that was visible to the public eye, to say we trust our players to voice their opinions and their, you know, and their thoughts on this team and their thoughts on the league and thoughts on other players, we trust them to do this in this medium, because that is a big part of why the fan base is always rolling their eyes at this front office, is because it seems like everything they do, they operate with this, like, you know, this faux transparency and this, you know, thinly veiled layer of misdirection and deception. And a part of that is the way that they treat the players, because you've heard it from a lot of players that have left this organization in recent years.
It's true. It is true. So We work every day. We try every day to try to get as many guests on this podcast as possible. And whether that's reaching out to players, people that work among the Bulls organization, we're trying every day to establish ourselves so we build some of that trust to bring some of those guys on. And I think Bobby Portis was our first step last year. So we're going to continue to try that throughout the season, throughout the offseason, to try to get as many people connected with this Bulls team to try to open things up. Maybe start that conversation. I think our conversation with Bobby was really good. It was really lighthearted, really open, and he's straight up, he's a good guy. So we're excited to do that with other players and hope we get the opportunity this year to do that. All right, on to the 630. This is talking about a trade potentially. So it says Quentin Mayo, but the original source is coming from Sam Amico from Amico Hoops. It says that a three-team trade is in the works that sends Bradley Beal to the Bulls for Jabari Parker and a first-rounder. He also says Tyus Jones also could end up in Chicago from a trade from Minnesota. Any substance to this? What are you guys hearing, and what are your thoughts? Happy New Year. Let the rumors begin in 2019. Thanks for the text message. So I'm just coming across this, and this is relaying back a couple days ago to Sam Amico. He's talking about a potential Wizards rebuild with John Wall being indefinitely out, the season not going the way it was. They thought it was going to go. They've got a lot of money on their books, so they've got to start to think about where they want to go in the direction. And that brings involved the Chicago Bulls. Reading from this article, it says Beal would likely bring the most return with teams such as the Charlotte Hornets and the Chicago Bulls among those interested. So Matt, Bradley Beal, we've had conversations lately about him, about his skills, about what it would cost to bring him in here. Any thoughts going forward on what it would cost the Bulls to trade for Bradley Beal, and would you want him a part of this young core?
I mean, Beal is a good player. I've always thought he's a little overrated as far as how valuable people across the league seem to think he is. As opposed to John Wall, whose new contract is just about to kick in next year with the ridiculous, you know, like $40 million plus annual salaries, Beal has 2 years remaining at $27 million and $28.7 million in 2021. So that's not awful money compared to the value you're getting from a player like Beal, who is at 25, certainly in his prime. The question for me is, I mean, for Jabari in a first-round pick, I think that the Wizards laugh at that, because essentially all you're getting is a first-round pick for getting rid of Bradley Beal and getting, you know, a little over $50 million off your books over the next 2 years. That is not nearly a big enough return. So I don't know if our texter was asking this sarcastically or just referencing that, hey, they heard this trade possibility and they were just relaying it to us. But we have heard that the only way that some of these teams that are quote-unquote interested in Jabari right now, compared to multiple reports, would be willing to take Jabari on is if that they are able to shed a big unwanted contract in the process. The Bulls are also reportedly hesitant to do that, and maybe not even hesitant, but have zero interest in doing that. But as far as Jabari and a first-round pick, look, Bradley Beal is not an unwanted, awful contract. Honestly, between Beal, Otto Porter, and John Wall, Beal's contract is the most closely accurate as far as his value. Otto Porter's way overpaid, and John Wall is about to be way overpaid. So I don't think Beal is a bad contract. I think he's a good player on a high contract, but that's not the same thing. So it's not like the Bulls taking on Beal's contract would be so great of a favor to Washington that the Bulls could get away with only sending them a first-round pick of Jabari. I think that's ludicrous.
Bradley Beal has been a really solid player. He's only 25 years old, too. He's been in the league for 6 years. I'm looking at his numbers right now, Matt. I'm looking at his offensive numbers and looking at his advanced analytics. And to be honest with you, I thought he was a better defender than he actually is. He's not as good of a defender as I thought he was. He's not nearly as bad as Zach LaVine or Jabari Parker, but he's still a below-average defender for his position. I'm looking at his defensive box plus-minus just over the last 3 years, negative 2.3, negative 1, and negative 1.5 this year. He's made it up for it on the offensive side of the ball. He was a positive 4.5 offensive box plus-minus, which makes him a borderline all-star. 2.7 offensive box plus minus in 2017-2018, where he was an all-star, and this year so far he's a 2.5, so he's going to add offense. almost instantly. He's going to be the guy that's going to be able to come in and shoot threes for you and make them at a pretty consistent rate. I'm down for Bradley Beal, but at what cost? At what cost? And are you moving Zach LaVine? I don't think the Wizards want Zach LaVine, so you got to keep Zach LaVine too. So you're going to pay Bradley Beal and Zach LaVine, who both play kind of the same position. You're going to pay both of those guys an extreme amount of money. Matt, would you deal Jabari Parker and Wendell Carter Jr. to acquire Bradley Beal? And that means you get to keep your first round pick coming up this year. Otherwise, I don't think they make a deal unless you're including a first round pick that's a lottery pick.
Man, Jabari and Wendell for Beal?
Or you take Jabari and, like our texter said, our first round pick this year, and that's what you're getting back. You're getting Beal back.
See, to me, the answer is sadly no, because I agree with you. I mean, Beal would be a nice addition to this team, but like, I also think that he and LaVine play essentially the same position. So if the Wizards aren't asking for LaVine and they want Wendell instead, then, I mean, unless you're saying we're not sold on Chris Dunn, we're going to let Chris Dunn go and we're going to have a backcourt where we let LaVine operate as the primary point guard and play Beal as a shooting guard, and we can kind of use them interchangeably at times, I could kind of see that working. But here's the problem. Bradley Beal is 25 right now. That's still 2 years older than Zach LaVine is. For as long as LaVine has been in the league, he's still 2 years younger than Beal. So you're going to get 2 years of Beal's prime, 2019 through 2021, at $26, $27 million per, which isn't terrible money for a guy of Beal's skill. But my problem is you're going to be wasting that on a team that's still nowhere near ready to win and contend at the deep playoff run kind of level. So you're paying a guy a fat contract because he is that good of a player, but I don't think he moves the needle that much for the Bulls. And then you're in a situation where right around the same time when you need to be thinking about having to pay Lauri Markkanen a max contract or something close to it, and thinking about re-signing Wendell, or I guess, no, in that situation we would have traded Wendell, but still, even just Markkanen's contract, then all of a sudden Beal is 29, almost 30, and looking for another huge payday. And then the Bulls are in a really ugly, sticky situation as far as who they're going to spend money on. And that's why I don't love the idea of bringing Beal, because I think you're paying a guy a lot of money on a team that's not ready to win
yet. I think that's the biggest question. It is, how big of a leap can this team make from year two to year three? Adding your first round pick, keeping the team the same way. Like, that's the situation you get stuck in. It is like, yes, the Bulls will have a lot of cap room to and a lot of flexibility, like they love to say. But the thing is like, think about the rumors we've been hearing recently about Anthony Davis. If Anthony Davis goes to the West Coast, goes to the Lakers, goes to the Warriors, kiss the idea of Anthony Davis coming here goodbye. I'm sorry. The only way I think the Bulls acquire Anthony Davis, if that's a real conversation that's going to happen, is through a trade. Is to get him before he goes to the Lakers or goes to the Warriors or goes to somewhere else where he says, hell, why would I go to a Bulls team when I can play alongside LeBron James? I can play alongside Kyrie Irving in Boston. Like, that would be the only way. And I feel like that pipe dream of Anthony Davis coming here is slowly and surely slipping out of the grips of Bulls hands. So we got to start to think about plan B and where this goes from there. And is Bradley Beal a good compensation for not landing on the prized possession of Anthony Davis? Maybe that's where the Bulls have to go. Otherwise, it's spending a shitload of money on Kemba Walker this offseason, or it's waiting till 2020 and seeing if you can play your hand with any of those guys that are going to be around. I mean, I don't know. It's a question that the Bulls front office is probably playing through their heads 100 times a day. Is every move we make now for the next 12 months is going to position ourselves for the next 5 years? So maybe it is. Maybe you do take a chance, and maybe the Bulls do feel like they're only one, two chips away from actually coming to that competitive part. But you're right. You're going to have to think about paying Lauri Markkanen. You're going to have to think about paying Chris Dunn. You have to think about what you're going to do with Bobby Portis. So there's a lot of questions. But I think straight up, if we're talking about you're out on Anthony Davis, you're probably not going to sign any top-tier free agent this summer, and you might not even do it in 2020, Bradley Beal might be a guy to look at and say, well, you could get 20-plus point score per game. He plays halfway decent defense. He can still be at that all-star level, and he's only 25, which goes in line with this young core. So it all kind of makes sense. And then on top of all of that, you could still be one of the bottom three teams in the lottery and grab one of those young Duke kids, and then you're really cooking. So there's I can see it from both sides, and I don't know where to stand on it. I'd be okay with both, not dealing for him, and if it costs you Carter and Parker, then maybe I think about doing it.
Yeah, but that's Anthony Davis, and I'm with you on that. But you know, Anthony Davis is on a different level than Bradley Beal.
Anthony Davis is going to cost you more than Parker and Carter.
Oh yeah, like Anthony Davis at this point would probably cost the Bulls most of their roster, and their lottery pick on top of it. But I agree with you. I think it's their best chance is to get into the trade conversations if AD tells the Pelicans, "Look, I'm not gonna stay. I'm not gonna re-sign with y'all." He's already gone on the record, and it can't be just a coincidence and by mistake that he's saying the super max money isn't all that important to me, not as much as winning. That's a clue, if anything, that he's prepared to leave New Orleans for less money for a chance to win in this league. So he can go to the Pelicans and say, "Look, guys, I appreciate what you've done for me in the first phase of my career, and I don't want to see you guys lose me for nothing, but I'm going to walk. So trade me before that so you can get something to start over." If the Bulls manage to get their foot in the door in those conversations with the Pelicans, that is their best shot. And it will cost the Bulls almost everything they have. And it's just a question of whether or not you want to do that. But I agree that that is certainly more likely than the Bulls wooing him in free agency. Maybe if they bring him here, then they can convince him to stay. And that is still a tall task. But we know how much this front office has struggled when it comes to landing those big name free agents in recent years.
And as far as Tyus Jones goes, that's an interesting move. Like, I'd be cool with that. It's not going to cost the Bulls a whole ton of anything, because Tyus Jones, I don't think, is going to re-sign with Minnesota next year. He's going to ask for a decent amount of money, and I don't think the Timberwolves are in a position of paying Tyus Jones. And I feel like if Derrick Rose can stay healthy, he's probably going to stay in Minnesota where he's had success. So Tyus Jones, I think, is the guy out in Minnesota. Maybe you don't even trade for him. Maybe you wait this offseason, see what he's going for on the open market, and then maybe you buy into him potentially being part of your young rotation guard among Chris Dunn too. So I don't hate Tyus Jones. He just hasn't gotten much of a look. He only averages around 12 to 15 minutes a game in his first four seasons. So I think what I've seen from him already has been pretty good. I wouldn't mind taking a shot on him, but I'd like to see what he's going to get on the open market in 2019.
Yeah, I know that that's something that the Bulls fans are really eagerly waiting for. We have to wait a little longer to find out what happens.
All right, just a few minutes more here on Locked On Bulls. You can drop us text messages, voicemails. You want to be a part of the conversation, do it at 331-979-1369. All right, this one comes from the 703. Wouldn't it be the best interest of the team to install an offense that plays to the strengths of this team so that they can apply pressure to their opponents on one side of the ball? Right now, they are stagnant on offense and still run pretty bad on D, making it too easy for teams to just demolish them. Run better sets using athleticism of the team and see if the core four thrives in this scenario. Basically, try to become efficient on the only side of the ball that is even possible right now, and resign yourself to the fact that defensive help can be acquired in the offseason. This is what they tried to do with Fred Hoiberg, and it didn't work. Well, it worked in stretches last year, but then this season he tried with a depleted roster, and that's what they got rid of him for. They didn't want to do that anymore. So the Bulls front office is now trying to flip the script, be better, be quote unquote tougher on the defensive side, and they're kind of resigning to the fact that we're going to run 24 second half court sets and we're going to grind teams out in 89 to 90 point wins. Like, that's just the case that the Bulls are going with right now, which is kind of nuts to me, the team that they've assembled already.
Yeah, and we have seen the result be that the Bulls are not getting blown out as much, and they're certainly doing a better job on the defensive end, which, you know, take that for what it is. You could be excited about it or you can not be excited about it, but they're holding teams below 100 points. Defensive effort is certainly higher than it was under Fred. But on the flip side, and I agree with the texter, yes, it would be in this team's best interest to play offense that was, well, I'll rephrase a little bit, not from the 1990s, the early 1990s, or even the 80s, where you're just throwing the ball to the big man and using all 24 seconds of the shot clock, and the Bulls have become a team that is getting these shot clock violations like multiple times a night. It's horrible, ugly basketball to watch. And the question from the texter is, wouldn't it be in the team's best interest to not do these things Jim Boylan's way? The answer is yes, of course. The Bulls are not helping themselves playing the quote-unquote offensive style of Jim Boylan right now, because it is so archaic compared to the rest of the league, and it probably will ultimately not help the development of some of these young players. Unfortunately, I think it has become quite clear that this is the only offense that Jim Boylan knows. Go back and read some of the things about Jim Boylan, head coach of the Utes, from before his most recent assistant coaching stints in the NBA. Just watch Jim Boylan's offense operate, and you watch and listen to him talk about the offensive side of the ball, and it's pretty clear that, like, Jim Boylan is that doctor who has not stayed up to date with all of the medical advancements that have happened over the last 15 to 20 years that is required to still be a doctor on the top of your game, still performing medical procedures that are now outdated and not safe. Like, that is Jim Boylan running an NBA offense right now over the last several weeks. So our texture's not wrong, but I think the question of, well, can't we fix this and do it better? No, I don't think so. I think until Jim Boylan is no longer the coach, for as much as he says, we're going to get there, we're going to run, we're going to do this, you know, it's just a matter of crawling first. No, I don't think Jim Boylan knows how to do that, sadly.
Spot on. Absolutely spot on. I don't think he knows how to do that either, and I think he's buying himself time by saying, we gotta crawl before we walk. Like, I just think that's buying himself time to figure out whatever the hell he's going to try to do to take another step with this entire team. I think you're right on. And this is the Bulls masking some of those terrible mistakes in the first 30 games. Instead of just chalking it up to simply having a lot of injuries, and that's the way that you guys formed this team, this is the team that you put together. Instead of doing that, they're like, "Eh, no. That, like, this was about spirit and energy and passion and wanting to play basketball, not about the fact that you had six G leaguers on your team and that your four best players were out for 6 weeks. It's not about that. It's about spirit and passion." Well, they're masking all of that now with said Jim Boylan, who's come in and made them play defense, which in turn has changed things a little bit. They've gotten a little bit better on defense. They've actually stayed in most of their games outside of the historically bad loss, but it only masks things for so long. And then the truth comes out, and you're going to realize pretty quickly that I think you're right, Matt. Boylan has no idea how to run a modern NBA offense, and he's masking it by quote-unquote toughness and grinding guys out on defense, and I just don't think it's going to last.
Right. I don't either, and I hope that for as recently as they have given him vocally their support, Bulls management and ownership realize, assuming that Boylan keeps things the same for the back 40 games of this season, that he is not the guy. Maybe he succeeded in toughening him up a little bit or getting him in better shape or whatever it is that they wanted to do to instill that mentality. And maybe there's a different coach out there who can make some of that, you know, hold over. But to me, that is not nearly as important as playing the NBA the right way as far as what works in today's league. And I would not be surprised if the Bulls end up paying three coaches next season and only having one head coach. Fred's gone. They're paying him $5 million next season. Boylan wasn't given the interim tag. He was named the new head coach, but he certainly has not been promised anything. And he is under contract for just, I think, a shade under $1 million next season at his associate head coaching contract salary. They can pay him that to go away, just like they're paying Fred to go away, and they can find somebody else this offseason. My hope is that, for the love of God, actually have yourself a coaching search.
We can all pray for that, and let's hope that happens. I don't think I'm fully bought in the fact that they're going to pay three head coaches, but I can hope. Bulls are 98.6 offensive rating a defensive rating of 106.4 for a net rating of -7.8 in 13 games under Jim Boylan. Their offensive rating ranks worst in the NBA. Their defensive rating ranks fifth worst in the NBA. Their assist to turnover ratio is the worst in the NBA at 1.27. So there's a lot of things that the Bulls need to clean up, and Boylan's gonna have to figure this out. He's gonna have to figure out how to run an offense, and can he do that or not, I think, is the million-dollar question for him for the rest of the season. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. You can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. Want to jump into the conversation? Drop us a text message, a voicemail at 331-979-1369. Wherever you're listening to the show, whenever you're listening to the show, interact with us there. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com